Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're back this week with a slightly happier topic to discuss. Tottenham beat Burnley 5-0, and boy, it felt like it's been a while since we've seen one of those. I am joined today by Ben Daniels and Brian Ashlock, and we're here to talk about all the lovely totals. Brian, we'll start with you because you were sadly not with us this week, although I don't know why I'm rewarding such bad behavior, though. So what were your overall impressions? Certainly, I think this was the most complete game of the Mourinho era, young that it is.
Yes, I agree. No, it was good. Winning games 5-0 is always good. I think that's something we can all agree with. And I think most importantly is for the first time since kind of like Crystal Palace, we had like a pretty comprehensive, victory where we just came out, we put Burnley to the sword, and then we just basically held on. Like, this wasn't a 3-2 like some of the other matches under Mourinho or, you know, anything like that. We didn't really give them much in the way of chances to get back in this game, and that was nice.
Well, a lot of those 3-2s were, those teams weren't really in those games. I know we got lucky in the last one, but still, the fact is we conceded two late goals in those games. And this one, Burnley had about a 5-minute spell where they looked semi-threatening, but honestly, we whipped the shit out of them from beginning to end in this game.
Yeah, I mean, on the Biakos, we went down 2-0 and had to come back to win 4-2. But yes,
Whatever the last league game that we had 3-2 in was.
Yeah, both Bournemouth and West Ham, game was out of sight at 3-0. We took our foot off the gas pedal and conceded late goals. And instead, this time we scored more goals, and that's much better. And we should do that instead.
Well, it kind of seemed to me like Jose had kind of figured out how he needed to play with a lead with this team. Like, with some of his teams in the past, he's been able to sort of take his foot off the gas, concede possession, drop a little bit deeper into, like, a lower mid-block, and then allow teams to, or force teams to try and break his sides down. And for this Spurs team, that just doesn't work. And so this game, we actually just kind of held possession and, you know, when our midfield would allow us. And that was a much more effective way of killing the game off.
Yeah, I mean, Burnley really didn't offer much of anything. But, I mean, it really helped that we broke their backs inside 10 minutes with one really good goal from Harry Kane and one less good, scrappy goal from Lucas. But, you know, 9 minutes in, it was 2-0. And, you know, I think Burnley just sort of gave it up from there.
We had a game a few years ago. I think it was against Bournemouth. And it was back when, you know, Pochettino's Spurs were still flying, which, not to make everyone sad. But anyway, Kane scored, like, in the first 5 minutes, just like he did in this one. And there was just some quote by Hal just talking about how hard it was to play against Spurs. And, you know, the thing that really stuck with me from that quote is just, you know, you have a game plan, you have a whole idea, and then they score inside of, like, you know, 5 minutes, and it's just completely out the window, especially if you're, you know, you're a team that's, you know, I'm sure Burnley was set up to play on the back foot, but, you know, once you go down, like you said, Ben, like 2-0 inside of 5 minutes or whatever it was, like, you just can't do that anymore, and it's all completely gone.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those goals, shall we?
Well, let's.
There was one particularly good one, I think.
There is, but I'm more interested.
Luis Sissoko got a second goal.
I'm more interested in talking about, we'll talk about all the goals, because I think they're all sort of worthy of discussion, except the Lucas one, which is just nice. But Harry Kane had two great goals in this game. I mean, a real long-distance rocket for the first goal to open the scoring, and then I think it was the third goal, which was some real vintage Harry Kane dribbling. Was it the fourth goal?
Yeah, the, okay. The third goal is the other good one.
Well, you know, and that game's probably over at that point, but still, like, Kane's dribbling in and around the box and really finds his own space and manages to, like, rip off just an unstoppable sort of top corner shot at a really strange angle, and it was just, I don't know. I don't know if this was a vintage Harry Kane performance, but it certainly looked a lot more like the Kane we know and love than we've seen in a while.
Yeah,
yeah, he's not broken anymore.
Yeah, I think we've had this conversation a few times where we grasp at straws, but...
I mean, the reality is like, we all saw the Man U game, and he looked very broken in that game.
Well, so did most of our attack, but yeah. Anything.
You know, he had two shots, nothing particularly good. He wasn't heavily involved in build-up play. But this was that comprehensive, all-around Kane performance where he was, you know, both dropping deep and playmaking and spraying balls around the pitch, and then also getting into dangerous scoring areas, you know, shooting a ton, creating for other people. And, you know, we keep hoping we're going to see this consistently, and instead it's been a little erratic still. But the fact that he still has that in his lockers is hugely encouraging.
And, yes, it was against, yeah, like, you know, a Burnley, which had their backs broken pretty early. But, you know, I'll take it wherever I can get it from now on.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, he did the damage to start with. You know, he found space outside the box, went on a run, held off some challenges, and then just whacked the shit out of the ball. And any other day, we'd be talking about what an amazing goal that was. But not today.
Yeah, because Heung-min Son's third goal of the match was incredibly ridiculous. Ran like 80 yards in however many seconds. I mean, it was just like, took it all the way from our box to, you know, Burnley's box and scored all by himself. I don't know about you guys, but like, I don't know. When I was sitting watching it, I'm watching him take it out, and I sort of sit up a little bit as he's getting around midfield. And then, you know, as soon as I realize, oh, he's going to take this, or he's going to try to take this all the way, I sit up a little straighter, and it was, I don't know, it's the most anticipation I've felt in a match in a long time, because you're just, you know, I don't know about you guys, but at the point when he gets the ball into their box, I'm just thinking, like, God, this has been so good. He really deserves a goal at the end of this, so we remember it. And it was a great shot. I mean, Son is a fucking fantastic player, and Spurs are incredibly lucky we have him.
God, you say that, now I'm just imagining he gets all the way down there and just whacks the ball into the keeper's shins or something. Oh,
you were thinking that? That's so exactly what happened. I was like, I didn't even want him to score because it would help us win the game. I was like, this run deserves a goal at the end of it. Like, this we need to remember this run, and to remember this run, we need a goal.
Yeah, I honestly, you know, I definitely have that trepidation when I see Spurs around the box, especially with Harry Kane lately, where it's like, oh, how are we going to fuck this one up? But there's that moment in Son's run where, like, he seems to, like, turn on the afterburners to pull away from, like, the three guys converging on him. And, like, right at that moment when he seems to find, like, an extra gear, it just, you just felt in your bones, like, there's no way this ends with anything other than the back of the net, because, I don't know, it was just, it felt right.
For me, the
and you
the
could
really...
see how much he wanted it and how much he was, like, he knew, like, at half field, like, this is fucking happening.
Yep. And I mean, for me, the incredible moment was, I guess it was sort of like, as it, before he got to Burnley's box, and there's players converging on him, and it looks like they're going to take him out, or at least slow him down, and he kicks the ball, like at the last second, he sort of kicks the ball past the last defender, and just turns on the afterburners, and that was just, I mean, he's so good.
I mean, I think my favorite part of it was Vertonghen's assist.
really just taking, getting on Tom Carroll's corner right there, you know.
I mean, look, it was a lot. The degree of difficulty in that was much higher than Tom Carroll's. The defender directly in front of him. He had to, like, loop his leg around the defender and then, like, poke it and like not just like in a vague direction, but directly to Son's feet, where he could pick it up, you know, sort of jogging at the time, and then, you know, really the way the ball was played allowed for everything that happened after that. I think if he plays that with a little less weight on it, Heung-min Son doesn't, you know, go all the way up the pitch and do that. So I think, you know,
all credit to Jan Vertonghen.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's what we're missing here.
I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I feel like Vertonghen has a knack for being able to sort of wrap his leg around someone and end up getting the ball. Like I feel like we've seen him do this more than once.
It's kind of like the opposite knack to what Serge Aurier has, where he has this knack of wrapping his leg around a player and then almost injuring them.
Yeah, no, Aurier's got a knack for a couple things, namely fucking things up for us and ruining games. Didn't do that this week, though.
Did get yellow carded, though.
you got to admire his commitment to it, though. I suppose.
He didn't get a yellow card.
Oh, this wasn't he? Yeah, because he had that really bad tackle on, I don't remember who, was it maybe Robbie Brady? And he should have been carded, but he somehow got away with it.
See? What a legend.
just Spurs transfer policy working to perfection right there.
Someone said something about Sonny's goal that I on Twitter that I haven't been able to stop thinking about since. But they're like something to the effect that it's lucky we were playing against Burnley and not Man City, because Fernandinho or someone would have cynically hacked his legs out from under him at half field and it never would have happened. And like in the last couple of years, especially under Pep City, where it is, they are just so cynical with their quote-unquote tactical fouling. It just makes me so irate, the permissiveness the league has for that kind of behavior. You know, when you're a team like Man City and you don't give up a lot of chances, any time a counterattack is sprung, they just hack you down. And, you know, that far from goal, you're rarely going to get a yellow card. And if you do, it's like, well worth it, because you're not giving up an amazing chance.
I mean, you're supposed to get yellow cards for those sorts of tactical fouls, and referees have been better about doing red cards.
It just needs to be gone from the game.
I disagree. You lose so much. Look, think about basketball. Like, if someone's getting an easy layup, you foul them. Like in football, if you have an opportunity to interfere with a
wide, I think the fact that it exists isn't the problem. I think what Ben's point is, which I actually tend to agree with, is if you're a team that is like has a lot of money and has a reputation for like, oh, Pep Guardiola plays beautiful football, and I guess, you know, he does, but people tend to overlook the fact that his teams have, you know, going back to Barcelona. In fact, that's how Mourinho was able to beat him. They in the semifinal with Inter is, you know, they have this history of dirty tactical fouls, and that just gets overlooked. And I think it's one thing if that's like a strategy for your team, but like Ben's saying, there should be some consequences for that. It's like you should have to think very hard. Okay, I might get a yellow.
They are yellow carding players for these tactical fouls. That's been a thing for
a while. That's not true. A yellow card is meaningless because refs never give the second yellow card, almost never. And when you talk about basketball, you foul someone going for an easy layup, they get two free buckets, you know, probably. If you pass interference somebody, they get a first down. Like, you get something that compensates for the foul.
You get an attacking free kick.
That's nothing. Attacking free kick at your halfway line is a meaningless reward.
What do you want? You want these people to be red carded for fouls on the halfway line, and then leave the referee's discretion to whether or not it's a tactical foul or.
Yes. I want every tactical foul on a counterattack to be met with a red card, and then they will stop happening immediately. Then you just have to defend the guy legally.
If they were just getting penalized with yellows,
I can't wait for the VAR on that. That'd be great.
If they were getting penalized with yellows regularly, it wouldn't like. You know, it would cut down. Like, you know, you'd have to choose when you deploy it. But if they actually penalized it, it would, you know, it would be reduced. They couldn't get away with it all the time.
any foul on a counterattack should be met at least with a yellow card, automatically, with no thought to intention, severity of foul, whatever. It's just, it's a yellow, at a minimum. But really, I would love to see them introduce a sin bin or something like where, you know, you're playing man down for 10 minutes, or you just get a fucking red card. I don't care. There are several opportunities where you see Burnley players pull out of challenges at the back of Son's legs. This is Burnley, like a cynical defensive team. They don't foul him, and this is the consequences, is we got an amazing goal and they conceded a goal. And, like, that's what should happen in a moment like this, is if you can take it to the hole and not get defended effectively, then great, you get a goal. And if you have to chop someone's legs down without even attempting to play the ball, see ya.
Hold on. I just want to make sure I understand what you're proposing. So say one of the Burnley players that had been in front of Son gets the ball and also, like, you know, also clears him out. That's, we're fine with that? That's fine?
I'm more fine with that than you're chasing someone and you can't catch him, so you just take his legs out.
But in that scenario where the guy commits a foul, but he's in, like, decent defensive position or whatever, he still gets a red card.
Yeah, I mean, I'm spitballing here. I'm comfortable to workshop this rule.
I just want to make sure that, like, no defensive action is allowed. Like, they basically just need to ole him to the goal. Their only option is to kind of, like, shuffle along with him.
No, defend the ball. You tackle the ball and you take the player with it. That's less cynical than if you're chasing him and you can't catch him, so you just clip his ankles.
If you're in front of him and you commit the foul and the result is still a red card, that doesn't seem unduly harsh.
I think refs should be empowered that if you do not make an attempt to play the ball,
worked out well.
That's the red. That's fine. I'm fine with that.
All right. Okay.
Ben, I don't think Europe's ready for your MLS style experimentations.
Yeah. We need some draconian rules here to protect the integrity of Heung-min Son's goal. And again, it was a moment where nobody fouled him and an awesome thing happened. And that's what soccer is about, is awesome things happening. And the more we do to eliminate awesome things from happening, the worse the game is.
What's amazing is somebody really should have fouled him, though. Like, there are, like, about 9 guys that had an opportunity to, like, shove him or kick him. They really should have.
Right. Rules as written, absolutely someone should have fouled him. And that was bad from Burnley for not doing the cynical thing. I appreciate that they didn't because, you know, one of the best goals I've ever seen happened as a result. But, you know, that's all the point, is you shouldn't be allowed to do that because it sucks.
In terms of, like, cool runs that you've seen as a Spurs fan, like, is that better than, like, the Gareth Bale versus Inter?
Yes, because that game sucked and it was over already. I don't like. What's the? Was this better than what was that goal? Was it against Norwich?
Norwich, yeah.
Where Bale just took it.
Yeah, it wasn't hard. He took it from, like, half field against Norwich. I think this was, like, just the length of the run, the sheer number of guys around him. That, you know, let's be clear, he didn't really have to beat. He just had to stay ahead of. He only really beat 2 guys.
Well, I think that's what made it impressive. It's not it wasn't, you know, not to say, like, you know, think about that Bale goal against Barcelona in that cup match right after he got there. It's not like a foot race like that was between Bale and Alba. This was, you know,
that's bobbing. That's still, like, my favorite individual goal.
It's a great goal, but this was different in that it was like Son just, like, bobbing and weaving through their entire defense, and, like Ben said, he was only having to outraise, like, 2 people on the whole thing, and it was a different kind of goal. I don't know if I can think of another goal quite like this, where a guy just sort of went through the entire defense.
There's the Messi goal against Getafe. I was saying
Spurs, oh, yeah. But Spurs. This was a very Messi-esque performance, or goal, at least.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of 80-yard runs at Spurs that end in goals. That's just not the norm.
I think Gervinho did something like that for Parma last year. He had scored a really good goal where he weaved through whoever, the entire defense.
Did he miss it at point-blank range at the very end? Or
no, he actually scored the goal.
That Bradford miss is still one of the best fucking things I've ever seen. I've watched Moussa Sissoko for how many years now, and I still haven't seen a miss that good.
Yeah, so how about Moussa Sissoko?
Yeah, well, let's talk about, I mean, the goal was good, we know that, and he had another really good shot on goal that hit the post, and, you know, it was probably a very good, you know, move. But let's talk about our midfield in this match. Has Jose Mourinho solved Spurs midfield? Is there a solution to Spurs midfield that involves Moussa Sissoko, something I did not think would happen?
I mean, people on the internet seem to think that this is the midfield combination that works the best, seemingly forgetting that Ndombele exists.
But, yeah, I mean, does it work the best, or is it just fucking, I'll take anything that doesn't involve Sissoko and wings?
Yeah, right. I think...
Harry Winks is the problem. I think that's clear.
Oh, God.
No, I think you're right. Harry Winks is a problem, and I think, you know, look, Dyer is the type of player that Mourinho was going to play. And I know we've talked about it in our writer's room, and I'm sure you guys have addressed it in the last couple weeks on the show, is, you know, that no matter how bad Dyer plays, like if he has a couple of giveaways every game, which he seems to do, his defensive positioning and the things he does in breaking up counters and attacks is significantly better than Harry Winks. His inclusion has to be like automatic at this point. I still think the best midfield is probably, you know, Dyer and Ndombele. I think that just probably makes the most sense for the personnel that we have right now. But, you know, this was fine. Sissoko does all right. Like, he covers a lot for Aurier on that right side, and he's done that before, and I don't know. It's all right.
I mean, it's... To me, Brian, I think you nailed it. I think we talked about it a little bit last week, is just that Dyer is like a shell of his former self, and there's a lot of problems, but the fact of the matter is his skill set, the things that Eric Dyer tries to do and in theory can do, just fit with what we need so much better than Winks. And I don't know, if I was Spurs, my number one priority would be getting a serviceable defensive midfielder in here in January.
I mean, we're going to sign Marouane Fellaini, so we're great. I mean, but the thing about Dyer is, like, and that consistently, you know, impresses me is just his positioning. Like, there will be a counter that is starting, and Dyer is just there. Like, he is on whoever the 10 is, or the striker, or, you know, whoever the, you know, is immediately receiving the ball on that counterattack. Eric Dyer is already positioned directly on that person and snuffs out the counterattack, or forces the... he either wins the ball back or he forces the other team to play backwards and allow the team to regain their shape. And I mean, that's been huge for us.
Yeah, the other thing he does really well is, like, even if he can't put on a good challenge or actually, you know, force them back, he'll at least shepherd them somewhere less dangerous on the pitch, whether that's down the flank or going backwards. You know, his limited athleticism these days means he's not always right up his ass and, like, putting in a hard tackle and winning the ball, but he definitely keeps things from getting dangerous. And that is just such a change from what we've seen with that Winks Sissoko midfield, or really a lot of our other midfield combinations as well.
And I think that, you know, you lose some of the passing from Winks, but if we're now relying on Alderweireld and Vertonghen to do a little bit more, and you know, and you have an Ndombele in midfield, I don't think it's a problem.
But so much of what Winks does, in theory, so much of what Winks does is help you maintain possession, which is in large part about minimizing risk. So it's, I don't know, like, if Winks isn't going to be doing that effectively, then, you know, Dyer just makes so much more sense, even in his diminished sort of capacity.
Right. I mean, I think the thing about Winks is his style of play is very risk averse and limits opportunities that the other team has possession because he helps us keep the ball more. But the reality is we're not super great as a team, as an attacking team, in a set possession sort of setup. You know, you have guys like Son and Sissoko and Lucas, who all really thrive running in open space. And having kind of patient buildup where Winks is shuttling the ball side to side and we kind of inch forward and then we kind of get to the edge of the box and have to break things down. You know, we don't have a Christian Eriksen anymore. I mean, in theory we do, but like in reality we don't. So, you know, we don't have like a lot of like lock picking type players. You know, Son's capable of, you know, breaking off a man on the dribble and creating some space. Kane is too. Dele can do some cute chip balls over the top or whatever. But like, for the most part, like, that's not what this team is really good at right now. And so having a setup like we did against Burnley, where we, I mean, all of those goals were us bombing down the field, you know, with five guys, five, six guys, and just sort of fluid open field attacks. And, you know, that's the kind of attack that Winks actively inhibits. And so, you know, even though he is preventing chances by having the ball, he's really, really limiting our ability to create good chances for ourselves. And the fact is even with all of that, you know, that possession play, when we do give up a counterattack, we are not equipped to defend against it. You know, we're often very overcommitted. We don't have somebody in midfield to help slow the breakdown. You know, I don't like Davinson Sanchez, you know, chasing guys on the run. So we give up really bad chances when we do give up chances. And Dyer really, really helps with that. So I think in both phases of play, his presence is a positive.
Yeah, if only we had a lock-picking, you know, attacking midfielder, maybe someone who played in another league in Europe, maybe comes from another country with a history of sort of playmakers, I don't know, like Argentina. That'd be nice.
Yeah, well, Lamella's hurt, so...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, yeah. Well, let's transition to that. I think, at least, I don't know if it's just us or other quarters of Spurs fandom, I am certainly concerned about the lack of Giovanni Lo Celso in Jose Mourinho's Spurs. Now, you know, we've said this before, and I think it's worth saying again, if what's going on right now is Mourinho's trying to, like, get some results to stop the bleeding and get things off to a good start, he's relying on players with experience in the squad and all this other stuff, there is, like, I don't agree with it, but I understand the rationale. But at the same time, like, I don't understand why we're not giving him some minutes. I mean, he's been good, honestly, even under Mourinho. Like I thought the most dangerous we looked against United was when we brought Lo Celso on at the end of the game. And, Ben, I think you made this very good joke on Twitter of, like, you know, it's not like he's from some Mickey Mouse league. It's not like he's coming straight from Argentina. It's like, you know, this was a guy who was one of the best attacking midfielders in Spain last year. And he was a pretty competent midfielder in France, which admittedly is less impressive. You know, this is a guy who should be able to contribute to Tottenham Hotspur right now. And, you know, I guess in a game where we're like pasting Burnley 5-0, I'm a little concerned that if the issue is, oh, he needs to get used to English football, well, here's a risk-free opportunity to sort of give him that experience. And we're not doing it. Right. And it's a little frustrating.
And, like, yeah, like, it was nice. We brought on Sessegnon, Skip, and Parrott. You know, we brought on a lot of guys who haven't had a lot of minutes under their belt who, you know, we felt comfortable in a 5-0 situation. But, like, it's shocking to see Oliver Skip get minutes before Giovanni Lo Celso.
Is it more understandable to you if Lo Celso is going, like, 70-plus against Bayern this midweek?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We have a dead rubber against Bayern on Wednesday, and, you know, Jose has already indicated that Kane's not playing, and presumably that means Troy Parrott's going to get a shot. You know, there's no reason not to play a complete B team of guys who haven't seen the pitch.
But to me, that's part of the issue. I would imagine that part of the reason Lo Celso's not getting starts is he's not entirely on the same page with the rest of the first team. And, yeah, there's going to be other important players playing against Bayern. I don't think, like, the entire first team is going to sit. But, like, if you want him to learn how to play with Harry Kane and Sissoko and Son and whoever, Moura, like, you know, I feel like this is the, you know, you got 20 garbage minutes, 30 garbage minutes, 40 garbage minutes. I know it's not going to be the same thing as like a competitive match, but like get his ass on the field, let him get some experience. It's very frustrating to me because I really like Lo Celso as a player and I want to see him succeed at Spurs. And that, you know, the thing sort of, I think, eating away at all the back of our minds is like Mourinho hates him and we're not going to keep him. And I think that's probably unlikely, but you know, it's not like Mourinho doesn't have a history of exiling dudes.
Yeah. I mean, what? I don't even know where to begin. Like, you want to, I want to see him in any capacity. And the thing that makes me extra sad is I really, really have thought that a Lo Celso and Dembele midfield is like really what we should be building towards for the future. You know, they're both very capable pivot players. They defend well, they attack well. You know, Lo Celso at PSG was a very good central midfielder. And yes, that's not where he was super successful at Batiste last year. He was more of an attacking midfielder. He has a lot of skill sets, and that's great. But Jose made a comment talking about his midfield options the other day where he rattled off literally everybody but Lo Celso. He was like, he mentioned Dier, Sissoko, and Dembele, Winks, Skip, Wanyama, who I didn't even know Wanyama was still alive. But like in rattling off like eight different midfield options, he did not mention Giovanni Lo Celso.
So he's got to see Lo Celso as an attacker, right?
Right, has to. I mean, if he sees him anywhere, that's where it makes sense based on his comments and where he's played so far, is that's where he's going to play. And when we have seen him, it's been like in the sort of like right wing, right attacking midfield role, however you want to describe that. And so it's frustrating because in midfield, he's competing with a bunch of garbage. And in the attack, he's competing with Dele and Son and Lucas, who have all been good, and even Sissoko, who played there a couple games ago and scored his first goal. You know, it's just a much more crowded space and leaves him, I think, a much harder road to get into the team.
And I think all the things being equal, I mean, having watched some of him last year, having obviously watched a lot of highlights since we got linked to him, I think all other things being equal, I understand preferring him in that role to a midfield role. But just given what this team looks like, and I don't, you know, the other thing that I didn't talk about earlier that I think bears mentioning is I don't think Mourinho's really had a full week off since he got here to really work, put the players entirely through their paces. So maybe that'll change when he's got a little bit of time to do that. But like you said, Ben, it's like if we're going to play him as an attacker, that's like we're going to have to get a little bit creative in terms of how he fits in.
Right, because, I mean, if he's an attacker, he's a number 10. Like, that's his best spot. But that is clearly Dele's spot.
Especially now, after the last few weeks.
Right. It's unquestionable that that's getting the best out of him. He's been amazing. Jose loves him. You know, so now we're talking about shoehorning him on the right. I mean, that's really the only place that makes sense. You know, Kane's not going anywhere. Son's not going anywhere. And if he's not playing in deeper midfield, the only spot available is this Lucas Moura spot. And yes, Lucas is the worst of our attacking four and, you know, hasn't seemed to be, you know, a particular favorite of Jose's. He's been in and out of the team. So there's definitely room for him to make that spot his own. It's just, you know, again, when we're rolling out Harry Winks in midfield every other week or Sissoko or, you know, even Dier, like, there's a clear opportunity for him to show what he can do in that spot, and it doesn't seem like he's going to get it.
I think it's, like I said, I think it's probably a little too early to jump on the Mourinho hates Lo Celso sort of thought train, but I understand why you would, because I'm certainly worried about that. You know, I think one of the benefits of the Christmas period is he's going to be forced to use the whole squad, and we're going to see Lo Celso one way or another. At least we fucking better. Or we're going to learn that he really actually does hate him.
Yeah, exactly. We have a month to of fixture rotation where we either will see him or we won't, and then we'll have January where we know we can purchase him for £10 million cheaper than in the summer. And if we don't exercise that option in January, I think that's the moment we start worrying.
And but it's again, we should remember that, like, you know, Son looked even more on the fringes than Lo Celso did for much longer, and look where he is now. It might just take a while. I know I find it very easy to dismiss that he's not, like, adjusting to the league shouldn't take this long, but that is a thing for certain players.
Yeah. I mean, the difference is, though, is, like, you know, when we saw LaMelo or Son adjusting to the league, we saw them playing regularly and not quite getting it. And
but they were playing in functional teams, so.
Right, but like Son's first season, like, he didn't look like this, you know. Lo Celso already looks good, and that's what's kind of frustrating to me. So he's not out there, like, misplacing passes and, you know, getting surprised by heavy challenges or not keeping up with the pace of the game. Like, you don't see really any of that from him, you know, in limited appearances, but, you know, he doesn't look that far off the pace the way some of these guys we've talked about did. So, I don't know. I just want more of him.
Where's my Lo Celso? I want to see us integrate him into the squad, because I think he is our best chance of learning to sort of break these teams down, you know?
Brian, I can only assume you agree wholeheartedly because you're not yelling at me and arguing.
I mean, I think you guys have covered pretty much everything. He should play more. He's very good. We need to find whatever role fits him best, whether that's on the right or in midfield. And, and we're going to find out here in the next month or so.
So
I didn't feel like I needed to add anything.
So we play Bayern in midweek. This game is essentially meaningless. The places are set in the Champions League group, and I don't think anything's going to affect things here. So it's probably just a game where we're going to run. I think Mourinho said Kane's not starting, so we're probably going to see Parrott, and we're probably going to see Lo Celso and a few other guys. And that's what it is, and that'll be nice. But then we play Wolves at the weekend. Brian, how are you feeling about Wolves?
They're good. They've had a pretty good season. They went through a spell where they didn't really win matches, but they weren't losing either. So I think they... as of, I don't know, a few weeks ago, they had the second least losses in the league, you know, behind only Liverpool, who, you know, are actually really good. I think Wolves have kind of taken the step up from, you know, promoted team last year to where they got into Europa League, and then this year was, like, as we remember from, you know, 10, 12 years ago, or longer, I guess, you know, taking a step from mid-table team to Europa League team that you can compete in both the Premier League and the Europa League is very difficult. And they seem to have pretty well managed that. They had they seem to be doing well in the Europa League as well. I don't know. I think this is a good Wolves team. And they have a really good manager who they haven't lost yet. And they've got a lot of really good players. This will be a tough game.
Yeah, it's frustrating we didn't get them earlier in the season. They seem to be struggling a lot more with the demands of squad rotation over Europa League midweek games. You know, they lost a bunch, they drew a bunch, and lately they seem to have figured it out. Since end of September, they're on a 11-match unbeaten streak in the Premier League. So, you know, whatever else is happening in Europa League, they've managed to not lose games afterwards. And that's frustrating. They're a tough side to break down. They have some good players. And
Adama Traore, you know, has been really good this year.
Yeah, but think Mourinho's got the inside track on beating his the Portuguese national team here. So hopefully that'll work out for us.
But yeah, they've already drawn Arsenal and beaten Man City away. So, you know, they are continuing their streak from last year of showing up well against good teams. I mean, not that Arsenal are a good team, but, you know, in theory, they also drew Sheffield United, if you want to know what an actual good team looks like.
I'm kind of interested in this game in that I don't know what to expect. I know that our performances have really picked up under Mourinho, and I mean, I know we played Man United kind of even, but I was sort of underwhelmed by that performance, and I'm really curious to see, like, I think I said this on the podcast last week, I really will start getting excited again, or at least optimistic again, when I see us start to play well against good teams. And I think Wolves is a good first step, or a good opportunity for a first step, and then we've got Chelsea the following week, which is, I mean, I think we get a full week off to prepare for that, which is probably something Mourinho could use at this point. But I'm excited to see, it would be very nice to see this team sort of take it to a good team and get results. And I think we're going to start to see whether or not we can do that against Wolves this weekend.
Do you think we're going to see anything weird tactically? Or are we going to just try and keep with what just worked?
I think you're gonna see what we saw against Burnley. If only because I think a lot of the experimentation he could engage in is going to be sort of consumed by midweek fixtures.
I mean, I think you could see Ndombele come back into the team.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot he was not super, super hurt.
Because I don't imagine they'll waste him in the Bayern Munich match. So if he's healthy, then you might see him replace Sissoko in the against Wolves. But and you know, maybe if somebody plays really well, you see, you know, Lucas drop out. But yeah, no, I can't imagine we tweak anything too much.
Yeah, the only thing that I wonder about is after the fad of a back three that everybody went through several years ago, including Spurs and Chelsea and a lot of good teams, Wolves remain one of the few teams, along with Sheffield United and Newcastle, who are still running a back three. And so I wonder if that sees us, you know, change our shape a little bit to try and compensate for that, or if we're going to just try and play our game.
That's something that, I mean, you know, Mourinho's sort of known for changing his tactics per opponent, and I guess it's just, it's going to be interesting to see that collide with, you know, I've certainly gotten the impression he is trying to get a handle on Spurs and transition them into playing a certain way. So
I think the most logical transition that you make is, you know, you push Dele Alli just a little bit up, higher up, you know, closer to Kane, and to make it look kind of like a 4-4-2 sort of, with, you know, the two, the double pivot in behind, and then with Lucas and Son higher up on the wings, so I guess a 4-2-4 basically, and then that would maybe cause some issues. You have an extra man in attack over the Wolves defense. Maybe that's the bet. Maybe that's something he does. I can't see him drastically changing the system though.
I guess we'll find out.
I want to jump back a little bit to something we were talking about, because I feel like this week we have once again seen the Jose Mourinho charm offensive in full swing. And as you said, Ben, it's very impressive to see sort of operating up close, whether it's, you know, what he's doing with the ball boys, or, you know, making sure Troy Parrott gets the game ball from the first game he's in, despite the goal that Son scored. One of the things that I think is part of the charm offensive is he's been this week sort of big upping Troy Parrott in the press and talking about how much he liked him and how he is in his immediate plans. What do you guys think of that? I think it's probably a good thing that Mourinho is at least giving lip service to our youth academy, but I don't know. He's talked this week also about, you know, we're not going to loan guys out that we like policy, which I think is, broadly speaking, a good thing. I think a big problem for guys like Kyle Walker-Peters over the last few years is they haven't been able to go get minutes on loan when they probably needed that more than sitting on the bench. I don't know. I feel like if we like Parrott so much, he doesn't seem like he's on Spurs level, but I guess he's probably going to get a lot of minutes in the immediate future. But what do you think of all this sort of Mourinho talking about the youth academy and Troy Parrott in particular? Brian?
I think it's good. I mean, look, like you guys have said, Mourinho is a pro at this. And so he knows coming in that the knock on him was he doesn't play youth players, he doesn't develop talent, whatever. And he obviously got that directive from somebody, whether it was Daniel Levy or whoever, that, hey, this is something that we need you to be conscious of. And he mentioned it in his, like, opening thing with Spurs TV that, like, oh, everybody wants to use young players and everybody wants to use homegrown guys and the academy here is great and blah, 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 blah. And so whether it's lip service or not, he's obviously been told, like, hey, look, we need to develop players and you need to, you know, use them. And so obviously if we have one standout talent, it behooves him to pay lip service to him and to play him in certain matches. And that's Troy Parrott. And, you know, he's also the only real backup striker that we have. So Mourinho's in a position where he kind of gets a free hit to use him on occasion because, you know, he can also say, well, I wouldn't have to play him if I had another striker. And, you know, I think there's not much to read into it other than that, like, Parrott is good and that, you know, we don't have any other options. And Mourinho is, whether it's Mourinho accomplishing his goals of getting more money to spend on other players or by satisfying some qualification that Levy has set out or whatever, or to just be able to tell the press, you know, a year and a half from now that, like, obviously I develop players. Like, look how many minutes I get to Troy Parrott. He started in the Champions League at Bayern Munich. Like, that's a very Mourinho thing to do. So I don't know. It's whatever. Like, let's just enjoy Troy Parrott playing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's like anything with Jose. It's really, really, really hard to separate his charm offensive, what's genuine and what's cynical media manipulation or fan manipulation. Because, you know, I think he is a good manager who has probably learned some lessons over his long career. And he is also a just master manipulator. And it's really hard to untangle those sometimes.
Sorry to butt in. I don't think it has to be important to untangle, because all managers at a certain level have to play the game. Play the game with the press, play the game with the people that sign their checks, play the game with the fans. Like, and Jose is obviously very good at it. Pochettino was good at it in an entirely different way. And so I don't see why it's important to unpack whether it's because of a charm offensive or because it accomplishes some cynical goal that Jose has or what. It's just like, you
know? Well, I mean, I think in terms of, like, what does it actually mean when he talks about, you know, restarting this youth loan policy and getting these guys some more development? Is it because he's actually planning on using these guys more, or is it because he knows it's the right thing to say and he still has no intention of using them, but now, you know, he's got these kids out of his dressing room and, you know, if someone does come back particularly useful, maybe he'll give them a look, but maybe he just will continue to bury them like he has done it, you know, all of his previous clubs. But at least he can say, well, I gave him a shot in the championship and, you know, what more do you want from me? I think that is important because in terms of, you know, what's going to happen a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, however long Jose is in the clubhouse, figuring out what exactly his angle is here, I think is going to be determinative in what actually happens. And if we're trying to predict what happens, you know, that is why I think it's important. But you're right, like, you know, whether he's playing Troy Parrott because he thinks Troy Parrott's good or because he thinks the fans will like it, it doesn't matter because Troy Parrott's still going to get minutes. And if Troy Parrott does well, then he'll keep playing him because it's both a PR win and a win for the team. So, yeah, on some level it doesn't matter, but on other levels I think it might.
And, I mean, if you're talking about, like, you know, like, long-term plans and, like, yes, I think a lot of us have been saying – I think specifically with reference to players like Kyle Walker-Peters and Oliver Skip, that they should be on loan. They should be playing consistent minutes, whether that's in the championship or in for a lower Premier League team or at whatever their level is. Like, I think we'd all agree that we probably would have preferred Walker-Peters to have been at, you know, a Burnley or a Newcastle or, you know, wherever on loan for the last couple seasons and not just rotting on our bench. And so is that calculated by Jose? I don't know. Like, does he really know what the fans... does he care what the fans think of the club's loan policy to the extent that he thinks it's a good PR move to restart it? Or, you know, like you said, is it something where it's just like, let's get these kids experience, or let's get them out of my dressing room so I can just have the senior level pros, or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, it's something that is going to benefit Jose one way or the other. If they go out on loan and they can't cut it, Jose can say, ah, we tried, they're not that good. If they go out on loan and they're great and they come back, then Jose can say, look, this is how I developed them. And you know, if we sell them on for a lot of money because of any performances, Jose can say, oh, well, look, we gave them these opportunities that weren't there before. So, you know, I think everything that Jose does is for Jose, you know, even when it doesn't appear to be. But, like, this is kind of the kind of stuff that also benefits the club one way or the other.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I just keep coming back to...
I mean, I don't see a downside, really, to sending these guys out on loan. Like, the downside is we learn that they're not good enough, and then we don't deal with them anymore.
No, the downside is we keep guys like Parrott on the team when they're maybe not quite ready for it, and, like, maybe they'll never be, but what if we give them a little bit of seasoning and they could be? I mean, the flip side of this is, I mean, I'm sure Kane's loans helped him in some abstract way, but it's not like, you know, it wasn't, like, sort of a linear progression with him. It's just... I don't know. A lot of people who
came around a lot and like played him in the Europa League and then loaned him out in the second half of seasons a lot. And you know,
a lot of people who know better than me say that Troy Parrott's a very good player, and I am excited about him. I'll just feel a lot more excited about him getting minutes for Spurs when he is playing well for Spurs' first team, which I don't think we've really seen much of so far. Which isn't any sort of judgment on him. I want to be very clear. He hasn't had a ton of minutes, but it's just, I don't know. I feel like after living through the Kyle Walker-Peters experience and the Marcus Edwards experience, it's just sort of like, I don't know. I'm glad we're going to be handling things differently, and given that Parrott seems to be our most promising youth player, it's a little concerning to me that that's the one we don't seem to be handling any differently.
Well, I think there's two sides of this loan policy that I think it's easy to forget. I mean, you know, I think we all read the Andros Townsend Player Tribune article the other day, and if you haven't, you really should. It's really insightful and really interesting and really good. But he talked a lot about how he was sent on like 11 different loans in a few short years, and how psychologically damaging that was for him, and how hard it was for him to have to keep adjusting and have to, you know, be this, you know, kind of pampered teen at a club like Tottenham Hotspur playing in League One against, you know, old pros fighting for their mortgage payment. And, you know, he was isolated, he was living in hotel rooms, and, you know, he did not speak fondly about that experience as a benefit for his development at all. And, you know, there were definitely times like, well, under the Harry Redknapp era, where we had that very promising academy of Tom Carroll and Harry Kane and Townsend and Mason, et cetera, where we bemoaned, you know, the absence of these guys in games where we could have and should have been using them, even as recently as Pochettino's era when, like, Josh Onuma was out on loan, you know, where we had the opportunity. Like, Tom Carroll could have been in Ryan Mason or Nabil Bentaleb's shoes under Tim Sherwood. I mean, Sherwood tried to bring Carroll back from QPR to give him those minutes in our first team and couldn't. And as a result, you know, maybe Tom Carroll never would have been any better than the Tom Carroll that he is today, but maybe he would have. You know, there's a lot of issues where players are on teams that don't necessarily have their developmental interests at heart. They have their own interests. They're trying to win promotion or avoid relegation or, you know, develop their own players or whatever. I mean, look at Jack Clark, who we've sent this year to back to Leeds, and because they've loaned so many other players, he can't even get in the squad. And this is going to be a wasted year for a guy that we bought to be a promising young talent. So there is a lot of downside to this loan policy. And so, you know, yes, we've seen Kyle Walker-Peters stagnate with the first team, but, you know, it's not that long ago that we were watching guys struggle on loan and say, boy, I wish someone who cared more about their development was shepherding these crucial years of their life. And that's why Pochettino changed the policy. So
it seems like there's been a big change since, like, the days. I mean, Ben, you probably remember these days more clearly than I do, but it seems like there's been a big change from the days when Kyle Walker and Danny Rose were on loan. It seems like teams in the sort of lower tier of the Premier League were much more willing to, A, take these guys on, and B, give them real minutes. And maybe I'm just, that's a warped perspective because those players ended up being so good, they sort of demanded minutes. But it seems a lot harder to get guys like that minutes nowadays.
Yeah, Premier League loans are hard. I mean, you know, the bottom of the table is much, much richer than they were 10 years ago. And why take a shot on, you know, a young kid at Spurs when for £10 million you could buy a guy who, you know, was fantastic in Belgium and see how he translates?
Yeah, unless it's like Chelsea's wonder striker, then, like, you know,
right.
Yeah, why don't you use your own guy?
The only guy I can think of this season, and I might be mistaken, but the only guy I can really think of who's having a phenomenal loan year in the Premier League is Harry Wilson on loan from Liverpool at Bournemouth. And he seems to be a particularly excellent talent, and not just, you know, some kid. You know, he was at Derby last year. He scored 15 goals in the championship. He was a key part of Lampard's side. You know, so he's a lot more proven than someone like Tanganga, who, you know, looks promising in his appearances for Spurs, but, you know, hasn't really demonstrated it to that degree. And yeah, you're just not seeing Premier League sides, for the most part, take a lot of chances on these kids. So it's hard.
Well, I said before that, you know, what concerns me about Parrott is we just haven't seen him play well in a Spurs shirt. I don't know if let's see how he does against Bayern is a fair assessment, but hopefully we'll see that this week anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for Parrott. I mean, he's already been capped by the senior Irish national team. You know, everybody in football seems to think very, very highly of him. He destroyed it at youth level. You know, he's still very, very young. And, you know, he's lucky at Spurs that he's only behind Harry Kane, who, yes, Harry Kane plays every fucking minute available to him. But, you know, he's not very far down the depth chart. And so, you know, keeping him around this season, when we're thin at striker.
I mean, he could very much lock up. Like, I mean, it would not be difficult for him to, even with all we said tonight, it would not be difficult for him to lock up backup striker at Spurs. Now, part of that's because we have Son and Mora and, you know, we have other places where goals are coming from. But it would not be hard for him to lock that position up going forward.
Yeah, but I think we should all be excited to see what he does against Bayern. I can't imagine they're going to play a first team either. I mean, they're struggling right now in the Bundesliga, and, you know, they already have top spot locked up, so, you know, there's no reason for them to put out their best team. So, should have an opportunity to...
It'll be a nice friendly. It'll be a nice friendly in Munich, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, Bayern are currently 7th right now. 7 points out of first, you know. They need to put all their attention on the league. So it should be a warmer welcome than he might have otherwise received.
Well, thank God we're not 7 points away from our goal. That would suck, right?
Yeah. Now, which 7 points clear of relegation?
Oh, good point, good point.
We're 8 points clear of relegation, actually. So.
Look at, oh, Jesus, is that it?
Yeah, it's very tight.
Brian, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today?
Things are good now. We're winning games. This is fun again.
Are you genuinely confident in this team now? Do you really think things are trending in the right direction?
I mean, I don't know how you couldn't. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, I guess you want to win the Manchester United game, but what else do you want?
Oh, like I said, I'd like to see us play well against a good team. That'll be my sort of, I'll start to chill out a little bit about Spurs once that happens, which is not impossible. Like, that could be happening this weekend and next week. It's not, like, it would not shock me. It's just, I would like to see it.
I mean, I'm just happy we're beating the teams we're supposed to beat again. Like, you know, we weren't even doing that in the late Pochettino era. Like, you know, we beat Bournemouth, we beat West Ham, we've beat who do we play? Burnley. Burnley. We beat Burnley. Jesus. And we weren't doing that sort of thing under Pochettino at the end. We were, you know, drawing with Watford and losing to Brighton and
well, and looking relatively comfortable while we won those games. So that's something.
Yeah. So this is an improvement. I don't think you could look at it and say it's not trending up or that things aren't markedly improved.
Ben, right. Do you have any?
Had Burnley beaten us, they would be ahead of us in the table right now.
Jesus.
So, you know, they're not great, but like. You know, they're a respectable side.
They're not relegation fodder, is what you're saying.
Right, you're right. Burnley aren't going down this season, probably.
Do you have any final thoughts, Ben?
No.
All right. Where can people find you on the internet, Ben?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs. And I guess I should say you can find me on Tumblr at Brett Rainbow.
Yeah, of course. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock, and I am just waiting for Twitter to release the usernames that they contracted so I can finally get rid of the underscore.
Extremely same. And that's Brian with a Y, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Yes. And you can find me on Twitter.com at skipjack0079. And if you've gotten this far, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it when you do that.
Or a 4-star one. I mean, whatever.
No. 5-star. Too many people don't like us on there. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.